Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At MidwayUSA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome back for another OG Show Live. Mr. Randall, how you doing?
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Reel Down.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for News.
Hi, boys and girls. Welcome to, once again, Bass Kayak Appears.
Brother, this is the final cast.
Another segment of Chasing the Tide, your saltwater connection on the Paladin.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur, your host, Brad.
Welcome back to the Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Crystal.
Hey, welcome back to Off the Water.
This is Q here with Adventures of Outdoor Woman Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the Rusty Hook Kayak Fishing Podcast.
We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, go to eastport.info. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Feather and Fur. And tonight we have on Dave Palmer from Punisher Waterfowl. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. Talking to you again. I mean, to all the listeners out there, I don't know if they tuned in last time. Dave is also on the new canoe team with me, and we did a waterfowl slash deer hunting episode in the kayak. So figure bring Dave on and we'll just do some waterfowl talk.
Yeah, I remember that was a good time there. Me, you, and Schiller. Yeah.
It's always a good time when Schiller's around. It's nice. It's good to have some backup so when you can pick on him, he doesn't know what to say.
Yeah.
I'll have to tag him in this and be like, hey, listen to the opening.
Yeah. He'll appreciate it, right? It's mad love. That's all it is.
He's probably still upset. He came up here for deer hunting. He saw one doe. That's all he saw all day. And I was done 18 minutes into the season. I get a text that says, F you, Brad.
Did you at least take him over some ducks?
We were deer focused after he was cold. And he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go home and hunt by me. So he left.
I'm going home.
Pretty much. I should change his name in our group chat to Cartman. I'm gonna do that tonight. I'm gonna change it to Cartman. He'd be like, who changed it to Cartman? And be like, I did, because F you guys, I'm going home. That's hilarious. But no, like the season like abruptly came to an end, but I think it'll be okay. Yesterday I went out and did a bunch of scouting. It got real cold Sunday night, 8 degrees, no wind. Oh, yeah. So all the marshes locked up. I went and checked the big river by me, the Wisconsin River, and that was a slushicle rolling. Like there wasn't even clean water on the river. I'm like, oy, figured for sure the season was going to be over, but got warm out last night. Warm. It got almost 40 day with the sun. So the river's clean at least. And I'm hoping maybe some marshes might be able to open back up a little bit to at least we can get back into them. Cause there's still birds around. They're just hanging out in the middle of lakes now, which you just can't do anything about.
Yeah. Did you guys, like, it just seemed like here, normally you get that, like, it takes a month for you to get into the actual snow staying on the ground. This year, I don't know if you guys had the same thing, but it was just like, you kind of woke up one morning and you went, oh, I guess I should put my summer clothes away. Like, it was just the weirdest year. I don't know.
It was same here, because I want to say it was 2 weeks ago. It was 70 degrees out.
Yeah.
Like, And all of a sudden, like, we have snow. We got snow day after day after day. We had snow for deer hunting, which I remember snow deer hunting before, but it was just crazy because you're right. It was like, it was 70 degrees 2 weeks ago, and now it's cold. There's guys ice fishing by me.
Yeah, it's not like that here. We're not that cold yet. So, wow. It almost came in too fast. And I'm wondering if those birds are just going to come and not stage, like, you know how normally they kind of follow that frost line, the good birds, right. They kind of follow that. This year, I haven't been able to hunt. I haven't been scouting much just because I didn't know if I'd hunt this year. And I'm kind of wondering, are those birds just going to, like, one day and gone? You know what I mean? We'll see.
We have a lot. I mean, after that cold snap, our bird numbers are pretty low right now. I mean, I'll push through the rest of the season, but I don't see any spectacular or phenomenal hunts happening, honestly.
No, but hey,
but
I'd rather be out hunting than going to work or anything. You know what I'm saying?
Agreed. And I have off all week too. And we got that big cold snap. I was real concerned. I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, I'm not in the mood to start ice fishing yet. Like, it's still hunting season in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, start texting buddies. I'm like, what's it like in Illinois? I'll drive south.
Yes. This year might have been a great year to chase that, right?
Right.
Yeah. I might have to think about that.
Just crazy. Crazy year. It seemed like it was just here and go. I mean, it feels really that way for me, especially on the ducks. I spent so much of my October and the beginning of November just focused on grouse hunting. Like, I was invited to be a guide at the Rough Grouse Society's grouse camp. I took a dog trainer out for his first time. We had our grouse camp. I was up another weekend on top of that. So pretty much focused all of October on grouse. Then September rolled around. Last weekend was gun deer. So I've only been out for 2 weekends. And it's like the season ends in like, what was that, like 9 days, 10 days, something like that. I'm like, man, I missed an entire waterfall season this year.
Yeah. So if you could have, how many days do you think would have been good hunting out of your boat this year? Like, do you think you could have got the whole season, or is it you're kind of stuck? There's no boating right now.
No, I can get out on the boat right now. Very select waters. Yeah. Now you'd be able to see some marshes open back up, especially if there's some current. Like, if there's a current running through there, I think they'll open back up. Might have to chop your way with an axe through to get the boat in the water. But once you get the boat in, I think you'll be able to break some stuff open. So season started September 1st. For teal, shut down, opened back up the first weekend in October, basically. So if you wanted to focus on waterfowl, you would have had a solid almost 2 months with teal season of being able to get out there.
Yeah, because it stayed warm, right?
Yeah.
So fortunately for me, so for those that don't know, I'm in Ontario, Canada, and we don't have that split teal season where people are shooting wood ducks thinking they're teal. And
yeah, what about the rainbow teal?
The
rainbow teal?
Yeah. The mullet teal.
I haven't heard him called the mullet teal yet. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, we don't have that here. It's just season opens on the 25th of September and it goes right through till the end of December, first week of January, somewhere in there. And yeah, we don't have to worry about that early teal and all that stuff.
Sure. So. When did you say your season opened?
September 25th.
That's a long season.
Yeah, so the way it works here is we have an early goose season.
Okay.
And then it shuts down for about a week, and then it opens back up, goose and ducks. And then we do both of those. So, and then ducks run through like an extra week in December, and geese shuts down just after Christmas sometime or just around Christmas. I'm not a big goose guy. As soon as ducks are open, that's what I want to hunt, right?
Right.
So, yeah. But
interesting. So, like in Wisconsin, we've got that early teal, which is the 1st through the 10th. And then that runs at the same time we have an early goose season, which is the 1st through the 15th.
Yeah.
Then all of that closes. Somewhere in there, there's a youth hunt, which is a 2-day duck hunt for youth. And then our northern zone opens normally the last weekend of September and runs straight 60 days, no splits. And the southern zone will open the first weekend normally in October for 10 days, I think it is. And then it does a week off and then runs for the remainder of those 60 days.
Yeah.
Then in December, don't quote me on the days. And if you hunt Wisconsin, look at your regulations, because I don't know this off the top of my head. We've got a late goose season, which I think is something like, I don't know, the 20th through like the 5th or like the 24th through the 5th or something like that. It's like a week and a half in the end of December.
Yeah. See, then we have another late goose season that's in like, it doesn't affect my area, so I don't know the exact dates. It's like February, March, somewhere in there. And that's for all the places that during goose season, if you can't shoot, there's specific spots that you can't shoot on Sundays. So those places get an extra week in like February or March, kind of when the migration is coming back, you know.
Interesting. So
it's kinda, yeah, it's kind of neat. I haven't really got into it because I have to drive like 45 minutes just to start finding spots.
Sure.
And then, but everyone's going there, right? So it's just like,
It's right, because everybody's combined in this little area now that wants to get back out in spring.
If you look at the WMU map, which ones are affected, I guess it's not really, it's more township based. There's not very many spots left. So we're starting to get more and more Sundays back. So it's not a lot of places, but yeah, it's something that can happen here.
So. It's a shame it's got to be on a bird that's got like no plumage for spring, right? I mean, what I wouldn't love to be able to like have one duck of any species to be able to take it in April.
Right. And just like, okay, this year I want to, you know, a wood duck to be mounted. This year I want to, right? Like,
oh. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, are you guys finding, we don't know about this year, but like last year and the year before, it was so warm, like until later on in the season that it almost seemed like season closed. And then that's when the birds started piling in, right? This year might be a bit different, but the last few years, it almost seemed like they should shift season a couple weeks, right?
Yes. I feel like there's such a big double-edged sword there. I mean, we still had quite a bit of open water at the end of last year, and the last week was some of my best hunts. And then like the season closes and there's no more pressure and all the birds get to relax. And like, I think it really exaggerates the numbers that were there, but I really think that second to third weekend of October is really when we normally historically see our big push. And whether it feels or seems like it or not, I think the numbers really do overall do show that.
Yeah. I guess my big question would be, if you could sacrifice 2 weeks from your start of the season to get one extra week at the end of the season, would you do it?
No. I wouldn't, because let's look over the past 5 years. We're getting lucky where things might start to come back. But I mean, right now we're ice fishing in southern Wisconsin, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
2019, I was ice fishing on November 16th.
Yeah, that's not me.
So the averages tell me that it's probably pretty good where it's at.
Yeah. Good. No, that's just a debate we've been talking about up here lately.
Sure.
So I was like, you know what? I'll get a Wisconsin little feedback into this just to see what you guys think, right?
I mean, it depends who you talk to, because we keep bouncing around, because we have three different zones. This year, it's the Great Lakes zone, the Northern zone, and the Southern zone. The year before, there was a Mississippi River zone, but there was so much uproar about that. We went to a Great Lakes zone, and there is a constant fight in Wisconsin for who wants the later season.
Yeah,
I mean, there really is. I mean, last year, Mississippi went later. This year, the Great Lakes goes later. But like, you talk to the guys that love to chase divers, they're like, all that's left is golden eyes. Like, what the hell's the point? Why are we hunting? Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go out there and shoot a bunch of golden eyes. Like, I want to go out there and shoot cool ducks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
so I don't know. I feel like you're never going to please everyone.
No. And when it's coming down to just golden eyes and buffalo heads, you're kind of like, it's kind of really cold out. Like,
agreed. 100%. It's like, do I really want to go out there in a layout boat when it's cold and shoot a bunch of golden eyes or you're right, buffalo? I'm like, no, not really. I don't want to take the Dramamine because I don't feel like getting motions. Like, I don't feel like the seasickness after. Like, no, I just don't want to do it.
Yep. Now, one mallard in that spread. Yeah, I'm going.
Sure. Right.
Like, ooh, that's a big boy. He's staying around now. I'm coming out yet. So,
yeah, you get a couple of those shore mallards that hang out in the open water and they decide to swing through. Then it's different. I agree.
Yeah. So,
I've got a kind of a crazy goal for now. Like, I don't know why, because it's so like ridiculous. But this year where I was hunting, we just had a ton of coots, just a ridiculous amount of coots. And I was joking with a buddy, and I think next year we're going to try it. I really want to put a two-man limit of coots on the front of my boat.
Yeah.
That's soft. 30.
That's
yeah. There's 15 each in Wisconsin. That's 30.
Yeah.
Just a big old pile of coots.
Yeah. Yeah. Then what do you do with them though?
I'm going to try. I make my own sausage. I'll try making them into sausage.
Yeah. Yeah. Just mix them with like 90% pork.
Yeah. Mix them with some pork and a lot of seasoning. And
Yeah. There's, we had that last year, tons and tons of coots. And I was like, oh man, these things are just like, there's so many that at times you're like, are there other birds even going to want to land here? Right. Sure. Well, then some of the youth hunters were starting to come in, and you know, they're up here, the first year that they can shoot by themselves is, I think it's 16 years old. Okay. They can use their gun by themselves. So it's like a bunch of 16-year-olds come out and they're seeing all these birds and they're just like going to town. Like every day they're like, yeah, we're getting limits. And I'm like, yeah, keep going, bud. That's awesome. That's yeah. So
what I'm curious to know what they did. They, I mean, I remember the first time when I first started duck hunting, we were, boy, that was a long time ago, but I mean, I knew some waterfowl ID, like I knew like diver, but I didn't know what was what really. Right. And I remember a buddy and I got into some Magansers I remember just trying to breast them. I'm like, this thing smells like snails.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, these are horrible.
Yeah. Anytime I think of those, have you seen that episode where, I think it's Remy Warren and, Steven Rinella cook up a coyote and he's like, have you seen that? And he's like,
I think so.
Yeah. And he's taking a bite of it and he's just like, that bite just tasted like what a coyote smells like. And then every time that I go to eat, like think of shooting a merganser, I just think of that clip, like that bite of mergansers tastes just like they smell. Right. Like that's
right.
Oh, I can't do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we don't, I don't shoot those anymore. I mean, no. I've never had coot. I mean, I try making them into sausage. I mean, who knows? I mean, it might be decent. Yeah, I know a buddy that he does all that diver hunting and they get plenty of Magansers. Like he takes a bunch of people out and they don't like, so Magansers and buffalo heads and bluebills and golden eyes and it all just goes in a big pile, gets ground and made into sausage. And it's actually pretty damn good.
Yeah. Yep. And I shot a coot last year, I'll admit. And I just put it in with the grounds and it worked. Sure. Right. Like that worked for me. Are you guys allowed to shoot cormorants down there?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Are we? Holy God. No, I don't think we are.
Yeah. That's just started up here.
No, we're not. No, we can't.
I want to say two years ago or so. And those are just like the most disgusting things ever. Right. So I don't know a chef that would cook one.
Really?
But they are gross birds.
Yeah, no, we can't shoot cormorants. Those things drive me crazy though when I'm out on the Mississippi River because they fly real similar to a goose, just like a super quiet goose. And until you get the right angle and you can see that long neck, like I don't know, they got that real similar like wing beat to them.
Oh yeah, and I love watching them when they're in the trees and then they put their wings out and they're just like, I own this shit, right? So
No, we can't hunt those here. I was thinking, what was I thinking of? Now I got to look. I don't remember what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Other migratory game birds. What was I thinking of?
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Yeah, the cormorants just came to Ontario for the...
I was thinking moorhen.
Oh, moorhen.
Yeah, I was thinking moorhen.
Okay. No. But yeah, it just came in like a couple years ago. But those things, like where I normally would hunt, they started showing up there in big numbers, and just their acidic crap that they take, that the trees are dying or dead. Yep. Like it's just, they ruined the whole... the picturesque part of the hunt, you know what I mean? So yeah,
that happened up on the bay, up in Green Bay there, a bunch of like, yeah, on the islands and whatnot, just like the trees are dying. It's not like they're taking over. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so
you guys have a sandhill season up by you?
No. I'm hoping soon though. We'll get them coming in, like, and those things will come in, like you'll have geese coming in and they'll be coming in like crashing the party, like, yeah, this is our feed, right? It's just like, so you can't shoot the geese when the sandhills are there, right?
Right, so, right.
But yeah, every time I see them, I'm just like, that's gonna be delicious in a couple years. So
I haven't shot one yet. I haven't. Everyone says they're ribeye of the sky, but I have not had a chance to actually taste one yet.
Yeah, if you go out to like Alberta, Saskatchewan area, you'll get some there and there. Yeah. Someone brought one back and, well, brought a bunch back and made burgers out of it. And I was like, it tasted really good. And it's unbelievable that came from something with two wings. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, yeah. So what's that?
I was going to say, it's crazy to think that a migratory bird like can taste that good. Like, I mean, mallard's good, don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's still a duck, right? It's still a migratory duck. I wouldn't say it's gamey, but you can tell it's a wild bird. So
yeah. Yeah. Everything tastes good wrapped with bacon and jalapeno, right?
Right, exactly.
But these things, you can make them into a burger and just perfect. So
yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Now that I like wood ducks myself. The one I haven't tried either is I've tried getting one, but I haven't shot one yet. It was canvasback. They're supposed to taste pretty good, but
you know, I've not taken a canvas back. I don't think I've tried it either. Wood duck is one of my favorites for sure. Absolutely. I was going to just say blue wing teal or green wing teal also. I mean, nothing against the mallard, but
yeah, the three teal species.
Yeah.
Yeah. Green, blue, and mullet teal are the best. Yeah. So no.
Agreed. So yeah, like I normally start my show the same way, but we just started talking. But I am curious though, like it doesn't matter. My show's a shit show. I am curious though, because I like to know, like, how did you get into hunting? Do you grow up hunting like with your dad and your grandpas and your family, or did you just kind of get into it on your own?
No. So my grandpa hunted when he lived in Scotland, and he immigrated here when my mom was 7 years old, and I didn't know that he hunted, because when he came to Ontario, he stopped. Right. My dad wasn't a hunter. We didn't have a lot growing up, but we lived on a farm. We had a 12 gauge and a 22, and we get rid of all the, it wasn't hunting. It was more pest control, managing the farm. Right.
Right.
And then I still remember in college, like two of the guys in my college course were like, oh, we're going deer hunting. I'm like, oh man, I'd like to try that. You know, I'd shoot a deer. And they're like, oh, you got your licenses. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then that's when I went out and started and went out and got my gun licenses and got my, and then I started, you know, dabbling with the turkeys and chasing them every spring. And then I took a bit of time off with the kid, you know, having the young kids. And then that's when I was about 25 when I fell in love with waterfowl. About 25. Yeah. And that was, yeah, it was crazy. My grandfather, when he was in his last week of life in hospice there, it was the opening week for goose season. And the only guy around was a good buddy named Dave. And I was like, I don't know if I can hunt. And then I go and my grandpa be like, you better hunt in the morning. I'm like, oh, okay. So I went hunting, came back, and like I'm outside of his hospital room, like in the hospital bed, like, here's the geese I shot, right? Because it's just geese season, and he's all happy. And then he's like, oh, well, what you got to try? And he's telling me the tactics that they used back in Scotland. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, we used to hunt geese in Scotland. They're pinkfoot goose. And now I'm like, okay, so that's, yeah, I didn't know that he hunted. Found out like 2 days before he passed away that he hunted pinkfoot geese. So I got to take a trip to Scotland and shoot a pinkfoot. That's kind of my big.
That'd be awesome.
That's my goal now. Just waiting for the right time. So COVID kind of put a delay on that. I think things are back to normal, and that's where I'm going at now.
That's the next big trip. Scotland for a pink.
Yeah, Scotland for a pink. That's my big hunting trip. Like, that's, some guys are like, oh, I want a king eider. I want this. I want that. Man, pinkfoot goose. That's, yeah.
Makes sense, because that family connection right there. Like me, like, if I really want a harlequin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I want one of them clown birds.
Yeah. So that'd be fun. Where are you going to go for that?
Probably Alaska.
Alaska. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's,
I mean, I know they get some that come through the like the state of Washington,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like your odds are just so much better. You just go, and I haven't been to Alaska either. So I figure kill a couple birds with one stone, check out Alaska.
Yeah.
Maybe like try to get a duck hunt, see what, I mean, I know they got other bird hunting up there, 'cause I'm a big upland bird hunter. I don't know what their big game seasons are or anything like that, but I've also never shot a moose. I don't know what it takes to pull a tag, but if I can get a tag for that too, I mean,
yeah. Alaska's kind of like the high fence hunting area for the world, right? Like, you know, you want to shoot a big deer, like you can go to this high fence place. You want to shoot some wicked ducks, go to High Fence, Alaska. Like right. That place is wicked. So yeah. So yeah, then 4 years ago, well, I guess 6 to 8 years ago, Damien, my business partner with Punisher, he put on the first camp. And then from then on, him and I were in contact. And then finally he's like, man, this is growing more than I can deal with, and I need help. And so I got on with the business there. And since then we've been running with Punisher Waterfowl and just not thinking about any other animals but ducks and turkeys in the spring. So yeah.
So for all the listeners of mine that don't know, what is Punisher Waterfowl?
So to put it simply, we're like a lifestyle brand that we're trying to connect hunters. It all started with Damien he wanted to meet more people hunting. He was in the military. When he came back, he wanted to meet people. So we kind of kept going with that theme. So now we run camps a couple times a year. Next year, we're going to try three, but I guess people hear it here first, but we're going to try three camps next year. And what that is we just take people from, we've now expanded to, we're taking people from all across Canada. We meet up in a hotel and then we go out hunting in the mornings and put on a big experience and people enjoy it. We run a podcast as well. The Union 0430 podcast. Get guests from all over. It's mainly waterfowl stuff. Sometimes we kind of go off topic, but yeah, it's a good time. Yeah.
So see, that's one thing I really do love about my show. Like, I don't have to worry about topics because it's just anything with feathers or fur. It doesn't matter which way the conversation goes for me.
Yeah.
Like,
see, and that's, I think we try to keep it waterfowl centric, but then like turkey season. Well, we're going to talk about turkeys and like, how's your turkey season going? And the second right. someone says, Hey, Brad, how's your turkey season going? Well, it became a turkey podcast, right? Like you're not going to like, how do you come back to ducks? Right. And it's good. It's good to have variety. But yeah, we try to mainly do the waterfowl stuff. The thing about the off season we find is that we can get some of the guests that are too busy during waterfowl season, like the guides and stuff like that, to talk about, hey, how does your season go and what are your plans for next year?
Sure.
But yeah, the one we haven't really talked about is deer hunting, just because that's too far left field for, right?
It doesn't even have wings. Like,
yeah. So,
So those meetups, are those for, I know you guys said like he was a veteran, one of the military. So are those really military? Are those veteran focused or is that really just for any new hunters or what are their meetups all about?
So these, it's for anybody.
All right.
We're finding like, we got to find a better way to do this because like, This year we ran two camps, and one was, this is our first year we did a co-ed camp. We just never knew how it would go, but with having all the, I don't mean to sound wrong or anything, but having a group of females there, right? We wanted to test it out and see, number one, would we have enough interest? Well, we had to try it because the female side of the industry is just booming and it's growing so fast, and we want to support that however we can, right?
Right.
So this year was kind of our test run. Like, we did a co-ed camp where it was going to be just however it filled up, we'll try and get half and half. And it turned out we had a few couples show up and it was a great time. I think it was a good time. That was when I got COVID. So yeah, it was, I thought maybe the shotgun rang my head, and it turned out my headache was from COVID. Wonderful. It was really weird, but everyone else was fine. No one else got it, but that was our first co-ed camp. And then the second camp is, it's basically just first come, first serve. We'll post up, hey, we're going to start this at a certain time. And the first, like, however many, say 10, first 10 people to respond, get in. We do try and have a big veteran presence, but we're also trying to support, like, the veteran organizations, veterans to hunters, maritime goose hunters, stuff like that, that do a lot of veteran stuff. We try to support them as much as we can with, like, giveaways and just however we can help.
Sure.
And then also, like, if there's ever a veteran that ever wanted to come out, there's five guys on our podcast and not one of us will say no. Like, we're going to take you out. It's, yeah. Thank you. Right. That's kind of right, what we're
absolutely
trying to do.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Cause I volunteer my time with Wisconsin Hero Outdoors, nonprofit that takes veterans and first responders out kayaking, fishing. And then while we don't do much, hunting gets tricky for them just because of insurance and logistics and stuff like that. But we work with people that are insured and do like trips on our behalf is really how it works.
Okay. Yeah. So maritime goose hunters out of, sorry if I get this wrong, but they're out east somewhere on one of those rocks, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, one of the two. They post up like, hey, we've got openings on these days, and they take veterans out and that's it. We're not guides here.
Sure.
So we don't do it that way, but like anytime that one of them, and first responders too, anytime any right. one of them says, hey, you know, I'd like to come out, or I want to learn hunting. How can I? Ontario's huge. That's the other part, right? So whenever they're like, oh, I can't get to one of you guys, are you coming our way? Or if they ask a question about it, if we don't know the answer, we're going to find it. We're going to search high and low and find it, right? We're not experts, but we know quite a bit of people that can help out. So yeah, that's kind of what we do.
That's awesome. So how's that? Like, so you got these camps, you're bringing people together. Are you like locking down, are you hunting public? Are you locking down a bunch of private for these camps? Kind of a mix of both. I mean, I'm not looking for your secret sauce. I'm just curious how like the camp experience goes. Like,
so lately what we do is we try and focus on, we'll team up with a guide service and they'll for the camps themselves. So Fair and Foul, they did our last camp. And then Highland Outfitters did the one before that. Both excellent, excellent groups, excellent people in general, right? And that's kind of one thing we look for is like people that we can. And then they'll focus on the bird hunting side of it. We'll still help them scout and all that stuff, but we're trying to also focus on the camp experience and, you know, like having good meals and, you know, the good experience overall, sure. right? Comedy act basically is what it comes down to. So
do you guys do any seminars then, like at your camp? Is like there any, like, is it more just like go out hunting, come back, have a meal, share stories, that type of thing? Or like, do you guys do any seminars like you want to learn how to blow a duck call, here's a duck call, like, or a goose call, or like stuff like that?
So the neat thing I found about all of our camps is that we're bringing together such a diverse group of people that like one person will be like, hey, you know, my goose call's not sounding good. Can someone help me out? And then we'll have another person there that they'll help them out, tune their goose call, you know, give them a little lesson. It's bringing people together and they're learning from each other. And then sometimes it's like scouting for what it actually is, it's damn boring, right?
Right.
But you'll get people that like, hey, can I come? And I just want to see what's going on. Yeah, sure. Get in. Let's talk about it. Well, here's what we're doing. And
sure.
We're driving around
wasting fuel.
Yeah. Right. We might not show them anything new, but you know, right. it's part of it. So yeah, I guess it's not really so much a seminar as it is just like a group of people to get together. And then the other thing that I'm finding lately is, as soon as we fill the camps, so we'll fill these camps in July, August, somewhere in there. We'll fill them up. We'll make a chat group. Those chat groups from year over year, they all kind of stay active and they're still talking to each other. And we're getting messages in them like, hey guys, I got a hot field tomorrow. I know you're probably all far away, but like, if anyone wants to come out hunting, come on up, you know, you can crash on my couch. And
that's cool. Like, yeah, like your camps are making lifelong relationships.
100%. And that's the big thing, is getting that experience of people, getting people together, and yeah, the lifestyle part of it. There's not many towns in Ontario now that I'm not too far away from someone that I've hunted with before because of these camps. And that's kind of a big deal, right? Like,
that's cool.
I guess I should say Southern Ontario. The Northern Ontario is a whole different beast, but
yeah. So, is there a line there?
Yeah, it's kind of like a checkmark line. You know, it gets up into the foresty area and they're like, what are you talking about? Ducks, we're after mooses and deers and yeah. So but yeah, it's a good time. And the thing we strive for is to make sure everyone leaves happy, and we can't guarantee the birds, but we can guarantee you'll have a good time. That's kind of what we aim for. You know what I mean? So,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
You can guarantee an experience that's going to have memories, like, cause it's all about the experience. I mean, I've had hunts where I haven't seen a bird and they're some of my most memorable.
Yeah. 100%. And then sometimes like people are going to be known from something that happened at one of our camps, you know, triple threat hunter, right? Like that guy, he got a nickname from one of our camps, the triple threat, you know, and it just stuff sticks and it goes on, and then it becomes part of the big circle. And we're just trying to build a big circle of people that just love each other's company. You know what I mean? So
that's awesome.
And then I think going back, that's what bird hunting should be, right? It's not like a deer stand where you have to sit there and be quiet and you know what? You're in a blind. You can talk to your buddies. You can see these birds coming from a pretty far distance. You can hear them probably. Shoot the shit. Talk to each other. Cook something up. Have some bacon. That's when they'll start coming in, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
The duck hunting and goose hunting is a social experience. Let's keep it that way. That's what I like that part of it, right? So.
Yeah. And I know we talked earlier about me like really focusing a lot of my season on like upland hunting. And
yep.
I think a lot of that had to do is just because of schedules and timing and everything else. Like I'd reach out and be like, I can't come this weekend. So a lot of like, I went out today for ducks and I was alone and I'm sitting there. I'm like, this kind of sucks. Like I love being out. I love being in nature. Don't get me wrong. But the one thing I don't enjoy about deer hunting, and that's why I pretty much every gun season, I take the first decent sized deer I see. And I don't really, because I want meat in my freezer. I don't like the solitude of it. Like I'm not like this super like, holy cow, let's go party guy. Like I'm not antisocial, but I wouldn't say I'm the most social butterfly in the world. But when I get in a duck blind, like I want to sit there and I want to just like talk smack with someone, like joke around, drink coffee, like just be idiots, like safe idiots, but idiots.
Yeah. And I know you probably know who Cameron Haynes is, right?
Oh yeah.
I read his book and I'm thinking, like this dude, he's going to the extreme. And how could I fit that into duck hunting? Well, you can't really. But you start thinking about it, like this dude is training super hard and he's walking into the forest until he sees footsteps. The last set of footsteps he sees, he's like walking for another day. And then he starts hunting. It's like, man, my mind would go crazy, right? Like, I don't know, man, the solitude of that, like, good for him. He can do it, right? But like for duck hunting, you know what? You're starting to see it now too. You're starting to see these lines of like 20 guys in blinds, right? Like they're all putting their A-frames out and there's 20 guys there. And it's just like, it's kind of going the opposite of what Cameron Haynes is doing. So it's pretty neat. And I like that better. I like the social side of it better. I'm not sure I like the whole, you know, let's see if we can get 50 guys in a straight line shooting a limit of birds, right? I don't know. That's, I haven't tried it, but.
It could be fun, but I feel like in a situation like that, it's probably going to be like, it's a whole line of people, but it's going to break up into groups, right? Like you can't have one conversation among 50 people spread over, let's say there's 3 yards between everyone. That's a long.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it's going to break up into groups, but I agree 100%. Like I, upland hunting, I love doing, I'll do it with another person. I'll do it with a group of people, but that's one thing I truly enjoy even doing just by myself. Cause you're not sedentary. You're immersed. I'm watching the dog. Like I'm 100% involved in that moment. Like, and I don't think about anything else. It's the dog. Yeah. It's the forest. It's where's my next step going to be. I got to get over this. I got to get through that. Wait, why don't I hear the dog's bell anymore? And then my watch vibrates, dog on point. And well, now it's a complete mind shift of how do I get to the dog that's 75 yards away through that?
Yeah.
But yeah. Like that is about the only thing I really enjoy doing solo. And I'm not even solo because I'm watching my dog do what she absolutely loves. So I'm not even alone. Like my focus is 100% on watching her work.
Yeah.
But
and
Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal. Develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping, MidwayUSA.com. The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Yeah, go.
No, I was just going to say like the same thing, like, I can go duck hunting solo because I have my dog with me. And it's not that I'm scared of what's I'm on the water and I'm happy. It's I have the dog with me and I have that companionship and I get to see her work, you know. I don't take her out in big groups. I don't take her out in groups at all. I'll take her out with two or three guys, but anything bigger than that, she's kind of staying home. She's a pretty hyper dog. She's German wire hair, so she is an upland dog.
Sure.
But not a lot of upland opportunities here, so we've been doing ducks, and just absolutely loves it. And watching her work and seeing the things she can do is just unbelievable. Like you shoot a bird and it goes 75 yards into thick, and you're like, I'm not getting that back. There goes part of my limit. And then the dog just like a minute later, like back sitting beside you, like, oh, here's the bird. It's right. Just unbelievable.
So, something special about bearded dogs. I mean, I have a Griff. I have a wired hair pointer Griff on. So I would have brought her today, but at 11 with current in these temps, just, yep. I mean, I'll throw a life jacket on her. I mean, she swims hard. She loves to retrieve. There's no problems there. But with the temps that it was, I'm just like, no, you're too old. Like you still run upland hard, but now we're talking a different beast. We're talking a river with current. With sticks and logs, then If I could hunt him in the middle of summer and I wasn't worried about like her joints, like she's old, she's 11. Like I can see, like she's got some arthritis. Like I can see when she wakes up in the morning, her joints are stiff, and now she's in water that I just broke the ice out of. I can just see that. Like I know when I wake up and it's cold, like I can feel it in my bones. I can only imagine her swimming. It's like no.
Yeah,
that ship sailed.
Yeah, I feel bad. My dog this year, she's normally, I don't know what yours is like, but mine, like when we're hunting, she's focused. When we're in the house, she's like running all around, but she does not want to cuddle with anybody in the house. Just wants to be on her own until it's hunting time. Then she's just all over you, right? And for the last couple of weeks, it's like. You could tell that she knows something's up because we haven't been hunting this year. And she's starting to get like cuddly, and she's like wrapping her head around me, like looking up at me, like, "Are we gonna go yet?" Like, you know, there's ponds behind my house, and you could see the geese go into the ponds, and my dog's just like, she's looking up at them and barking at them now, and like it's she's almost like saying, "Dad, you got to shoot these things. What's going on?" Right? So,
yeah, it's fall, it's getting cold. I can tell it's cold. Are we like? Are we gonna go yet? Like, what do you wait? Like, did I do something wrong? Like, what's wrong here?
Yeah, no, it's me. I crashed my motorbike and I can't hunt yet, so it's my fault. And I'm starting to feel bad for her. Right, that's the big thing. Like, this is what she's bred to do, and this is what she's primed to do, and she's held back because something I did. Right, feel bad for her. So, yeah, I'm not getting another motorbike.
Yeah. You know, there's times I miss mine, but the number of times I almost went down from inattentive drivers and everything else, it's just, as soon as I miss it, like someone cuts me off and I'm like, I got steel all around me and I still don't like what just happened. Like, that happened way too many times on a bike.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you seen those mud motors that are made out of a Sportster 883 motor? The Harley Davidson motor.
I've seen a couple.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know what? I can't have a motorbike, but I could have a motorbike engine. And then I started looking at it going, there is no way that there is a duck within 2 miles that's going to be asleep after you go into the marsh with this thing. Like, that's just a race boat. That's all it would be. So
I read quite a bit on those because I was curious to know how they would perform, right? Because I'm dumb enough to build something like that. I used to work on an off-road race team. I can fabricate, I can weld. Like, I'm dumb enough to build something like that. I read a bunch on it, and it just seemed like they weren't the greatest option.
No, but it still looks fun,
right?
Right. Throw a 1200 kit on it. Let's see what it can do.
Find a total screaming eagle with a 110.
Right. Like, yeah. And yeah, that maybe I should get a boat again. So I've been looking at, when I was all laid up on the couch, I started looking at, like, because I knew I wouldn't be able to paddle a kayak right away.
Sure.
So I started looking at mud motor, like 5 horsepower mud motors for the kayaks. And because I want to get out on the new canoe, right? I was like, let's get a mud motor. There's guys with mud motors, and
I'm one of them.
Yeah. And then I started looking at the weight to put it together, and I'm like, I can't even do that. So I think next year that's going to be my plan. I'm going to sell, I still have a couple motorbikes in the garage that I'll sell, and I think they'll turn into some form of mode of transport for the new canoe. What do you got for a mud motor for yours?
I'm running the SPS long tail.
SPS, okay.
Yeah, so that's the mini swamp runner.
Yeah,
so it's got that really, really long shaft. It works good. I don't have any complaints. I wouldn't say it's not fast, right? It does like 5 or 6 miles an hour. But when you got a bunch of buddies with you that are paddling and you're going through like the lily pads and that thick grass, and you turn around and you see them like hundreds of yards behind you, and you're like, all right, now it's adding up. Now it makes sense. Because you're paddling, the lily pad's stuck, you shake it off, you lose some momentum, and you keep going. Like, you don't have to worry about that. With that mud motor, you just pop, 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 and just keep going.
Yep. See, I had a mud boat here, and I found that 9 times out of 10, when I was going out hunting, unless I was taking a big group with me, it was the two new canoes, right? Sure. Me and someone else in the new canoes. And I wasn't using the mud motor because I didn't really have a lot of places here. There's not a lot of muddy spots to hunt here. So I ended up getting rid of that. And now I'm starting to think about it, like, that's the whole point of me duck hunting, is having a group out. So I might be getting two more new canoes.
I also picked up, I haven't had a chance to try it yet, and I know this is over the horsepower rating, so being on the new canoe team, I could never recommend anybody do this, but I did pick up a 4 horsepower Evinrude weedless twin.
Okay.
Have you ever seen those? They've got that really funky lower unit that comes down at a 45 degree angle, and it's got like a big wedge on it almost.
And it looks like a cone. Is that the one?
Not really a cone. I'll find a picture quick.
Yeah. I was looking at the EPS system, right? Because you could actually put that under the blind.
Sure.
I was like, okay, but then just logistics of getting it shipped and all that stuff just didn't work out. And I didn't really know what exactly would fit. But yeah, that's
I found an old school actual.
Oh yeah.
So this is like the original ad, but you can see it's got that crazy shoe on it.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a chance to run it. I'm kind of curious. I know guys that run them on like grooming canoes and whatnot. So I don't know if I can make this bigger. There we go. Well, this is the Johnson. The Evinrude lower unit's the same. But yeah. Yeah, they had a 3-horse with a built-in fuel tank, but I picked this thing up really cheap used with the 4-horse. I'm like, well, we'll see how it works. The only downfall is it's not a twist throttle. The throttle's over here, and it goes like the throttle. It's over here on mine, and it actually like goes up and down in an arching pattern.
Oh,
so I made like an extension tube for it so I can use like the throttle. So it's kind of like you run it like this almost.
Yep.
And there's no reverse. Like the reverse on these is you spin the thing around backwards so the prop faces underneath the boat. I haven't checked the clearance on that yet, but that scares me because it's a plastic boat and you get one little bap.
Yeah.
You're sinking.
Yeah. Hey, they're easy to fix if you get a cut in your boat. When I had that, I got an unlimited shipped up here, and the shipping company, Canadian side, they hit it. It looks like they hit it with like a rotary saw or something. Like there was a big gouge out of it. And I was like, okay, I'll just
probably so I filled it. I've seen so many damage with forks from forklifts.
Yeah, it looked too clean to be a fork. You know what I mean? Like it looked like someone just took like a circular saw and just like straight across, like they're cutting wood and hit it. I was like, oh my goodness. So Blake was super helpful. I said, Blake, I don't want to ship it back. Like it's everything else is perfect about it. Just tell me how to fix it. And he went through, he's like, okay, you gave me the whole process. And then like a week later is when they posted the video on the Instagram, like this is how you fill in the holes and all that stuff. And then he put the gator patch and it's mint. It's perfect. So yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I've been using it for the 2 years now. So
nice. So
anyway, the big thing to learn from that, don't get super excited from a purchase and just leave the warehouse with it on your truck and then stop at a gas station and go, that's a really weird design back there. And then look up closer and go, that's not meant to be like that. There's light shining through the whole thing.
Oh.
So yeah, my bad. Yeah.
So you probably couldn't make a claim, could you?
Couldn't make a claim because it was
already through
the hole. I'd already left. So yeah, my fault. But I was super excited. Kid in a candy store moment. Like right. I got the new boat and yeah, I'm going to go hunt out of this. And yeah, so it's 100% my fault. So yeah.
The Limited is an awesome boat. I mean, it's just a great boat.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like the fact that you have to put the blind clips in because I always forget them at home.
Sure.
But, and the other thing, I don't know, maybe it's just my paranoia, but like the water troughs, like on the deck, I haven't taken my dog out on that. I'll take her out on the F12 because the F12's flat.
Right.
But I'm just super worried about her paws getting in that and just, you know.
You're not the first person that has said that, and people that I've actually, I've swayed some people to the F12 because they were going to be in there with the dog the whole time. But like another concern for me because along the side you have the nice metal rails, but then you got the pockets for the tackle boxes. And I'm like, if my dog goes to jump out funny, I'm like worried her leg's gonna get stuck in there. Like, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. That the beauty thing about those paddle handles though, I don't know if you saw like for Mojo poles, I'll take a conduit and I'll use that as my extension because it's way cheaper. Like a 10-foot piece of conduit, like whatever it was, $5-6.
Sure.
That conduit will actually clip into there. So when you're paddling out, you can have your two conduits clipped in.
Nice.
for your two mojo poles.
Nice.
So, yeah, I like that. That's clutch.
So I'm gonna throw this out there for you because I had him on the show and we actually have a 10 per test discount. It's PNF 10 right now. Have you seen the Swamp Stick? I don't know.
No.
I don't know if he ships to Canada. I'll pull up a picture real quick. This thing is sweet. I can't go back to any other kind of pole, to be honest. So it's a two-piece aluminum pole, and it's got this big, almost like spear on the bottom. And then the pole's aluminum, so it's light. And it's got not a twist. It's got a cam lock style clamp. So the pole is adjustable. And what is it? 3 feet to 6.5 feet in height.
Oh, nice.
And they also make it with hooks on it. So if you do a lot of like hunting, like in marshes where you're like knee deep or waist deep or something like that, you need somewhere to hang your gun and your blind bag. It's got hooks. You can shove one right next to you.
Yeah.
It's pretty darn sweet. Like,
yeah,
I that's all I've been using this year.
I'm interested.
I'm trying to grab a good picture right now.
So the other thing I do is, because I'm hunting out of a kayak, I find myself, like when I used to have the big boat, if someone's like, oh, I want to take this, yeah, throw it in. I don't know if we'll use it, throw it in, right? Now I try to cut things down to like the bare minimum, because anything I mean, I'm 285 pounds. There's a lot that can be cut there as well. But like the bare minimum gear that I can bring, that's what I want to bring. And a new product out, have you seen Bluebird Waterfowl?
I have not. So
on your Mojo wings or your Lucky Duck wings or whatever wings you're using, on the one side, it kind of goes in between the wing and the decoy itself.
Okay.
And it has like a little rotating piece that when the wing's on, it's spinning a arm that goes down into the water that has a little cup in the water.
I have seen that. I just didn't know who made it.
Yeah, I'm going to try that out tomorrow if I can get my Lucky Duck to work. Yeah. Tomorrow's my first day hunting, and of course I go and look at all my Robo Ducks, and you know, one of them's broken and batteries are dead in all of them, right? So
there's that swap stick. So you can see it's two pieces right here.
Yep.
And then it's height adjustable. This fits Mojo, Lucky Duck, and one other one as well. And then it's got the hooks on it also. You can get it with or without the hooks. Like this thing is this thing's been pretty awesome this year for me.
Looks nice.
It's just nice, like, you know, when it gets cold and you like, I know you use the conduit. I've been using that Lucky Duck extension.
Okay.
So you got to like snap all those pieces together, and it's cold. The pole's cold. Like your hands are cold. I can't do that with gloves on. I don't care what gloves I wear. Like I can't work those little buttons with my fingers.
Yeah.
So then like you're setting all your stuff, your hands are freezing now. It's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And this thing was like, oh, just
yeah,
whatever height I wanted at. Like if I want it super tall or if I want it like right off the water.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Yeah. So I guess it'd be about 2 years ago, I switched to the floating ones.
Okay.
And they worked great. But then I was like, so I like to do everything different than what's going on around me. So sure. I started going to the floating ones, and everyone else was still using the poles. Well, now I'm seeing that a bunch of people are using the floating ones again. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get poles again. Like the beauty with the floating ones is that you could put them on a pole. And
sure.
Right. So like this year that guy over there, they're using two floaters. Well, I'm going to use one floating and one on the pole, and you can switch it up. Right. So it does both. So
nice. That's what
I like that. But
nice. Yeah. I don't have any. All I've got is, I've only got the one. I only use it. If I don't have much else for around me for pressure, I'll throw it out. If it's like a, yeah. I only really use it on sunny days, to be honest, or really windy days. I feel like it helps. But if it's calmer days, I don't, or if everybody around me is running them, I don't even use it.
No. What about Ripplers or any of those water splashers?
I have a Higdon Pulsator. That seems to work pretty good. And for wood ducks early season, I can't count the number that I've tried to land on top of it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they're territorial when they feed, but they're almost land on it like, that's my food. Get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Mojo just, well, I'm just starting the season now, but like for most people, Mojo released their flock of Flicker 2s this year. So we'll see how that goes.
I saw those.
Yeah.
I kind of decided, like, so I had another guy on my show, both Swamp Stick and another manufacturer called Quick Koi's. I met at the Wisconsin Waterfowl Expo this year, and I had them both on my show, and I actually picked up one of those Quick Koi's, and it's definitely the most expensive motion decoy I've ever bought, but so far I like it. Like, I don't the design is awesome. It's been working great. I try not to like really promote something until I've like beat it for a year. Right. You know what I mean? Like that Swamp Sticks, like I can already tell, like you're not going to break it. Like unless you drive over it, like that one's pretty easy to promote. I want to see the longevity of that Quick Koi. I know it's got a warranty and all that, but basically it's a hub with a brass propeller. There's a decoy that sits on top. There's four springs on each corner with like a 3 foot tent pole that you put another decoy on. So it's got a 20 amp hour lead acid battery and a waterproof case on 5 foot of cord. You drop it, you turn it on, you drop it in there. That motor runs for 10 seconds and stops. It's like the easiest, no messing around jerk cord that you don't have to jerk ever.
Huh.
I
was just about to say, what do you use for a jerk rig? But that sounds like a slick little unit.
I don't. Like,
no.
So in the kayak, if I'm in my kayak, I'll run a jerk rig because it's pretty simple. But if I don't have my dog and I'm in the boat, like the problem with a jerk rig is like, where do you put the cord? Like, where do you put it? Like, do you put like a pole in front of the boat you can hang it on? Because when I got to go drive out there and get ducks, if I don't have the dog, I've cut so many of those cords. I've had them wrapped up in my prop before. It's like, I got frustrated with them because it's like, I couldn't find a good way. I know they work. They work amazing. Mm-hmm. If I can walk to get my ducks, or if I'm on a shore spot or somewhere in my kayak, I'll use them all the time. But with a big boat, it just got to be so much messing around. Like, where do I put this stupid string? Like, do we try to drive and hold it? Like, what do we do? And then I ran into that product. I'm like, no motion, no movement of me jerking anything, no worrying about the string. Just turn a battery on, drop it, and walk away. And the thing just goes. And like all the ducks like kind of peel back, it stops, they all go forward. Like it's pretty cool.
I have to look at that. Yeah. The other solution you have, maybe like you were talking about a pole in the water that you just showed me a pole with a hook on it. I'm just saying.
I could use that. I've thought about it. I only bought one. I need to buy another one, to be honest. Because I would consider doing that, sticking that right in front of the boat and just looping the line on that.
Yeah. Then you just got to worry about like making sure you park properly every single time, right?
Right.
Like go pick up your birds and then you got to come back to the same spot you were at. Like, yeah, maybe hopefully this battery thing, Quick Koi thing works for you.
I've used it twice and both times have been awesome. It's worked great. The battery lasts for like 5 hours. We were hunting a super high pressured spot and we got set up. Like we were there early and like I turned it on early. Cause I wanted to just get set up. It was kind of cold. So I'm like, let's get back. Let's get set up. We'll get the blind set up. We'll button it up. We'll close the roof. Like I didn't have a heater with it. It wasn't that cold, but like, you know, just body heat. We drank some coffee and it runs for about 5 hours, but like we started it so early. I'm like, oh, I won't make that mistake again.
Yep.
Like that will be a run back out and set it up afterwards.
Yep. Yeah. That's something that you got to do more of, right?
Right.
I've
thought about it and I haven't talked to him yet. He's a super cool guy. Like him and I've had a couple of conversations, like more than one conversation about it. I've thought about trying to wire in a Mojo remote.
I was just about to say like one of those Mojo remotes, just
because it's just 12 volt. I don't know if those Mojo were, I know those Mojos are 6 volt, but I wouldn't be surprised if that remote's rated for like 6 to 24 volts, like most remotes are. Like most electronic things aren't rated for one specific voltage because they use what's available, right?
Yeah.
So I should look at that to see if I can't wire that in there.
Yeah. See what he says too first, right?
Right.
He just told me if there's a warranty, I wouldn't be messing with it yet. Yeah.
But I mean, that's, I think he'd be good with that. I'll talk to him first and everything. But I mean, really all that is a switch in between the battery and his master power switch.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't think it would cause any issues, but I'm going to talk to him about that. And for all I know, he's going to come back to me and be like, we tried that, being that the battery's underwater. It doesn't work. It works 10 feet away. Like, I don't know what the range is on that when it's underwater.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll work. I have faith in you.
We'll see. Yeah. Otherwise, maybe I have to look for more high-powered remotes.
Yeah, there'll be something on there. Amazon or AliExpress, right. They all have something, right?
Exactly. And
you can find the good one, Canadian, or, well, I guess for you, it'd be American-made, right? That's what I always do. Like, I want to build this, but I'm not sure if they have it. So then you type in, like, just a generic thing in one of those two search bars, and then, like, okay, that's exactly what it's called. Now I'll search for the real thing that's Canadian, like North American made, right? I know it'll last, so yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you got to be pretty jacked up to get out tomorrow.
Buddy, I've been waiting for this to go on. And the best part about it is, like, one of my closest hunting buddies is a doctor. And I was just like, hey, man, I can go out Tuesday. And he's like, I'll go with you. I'm like, so, like, I have a doctor coming with me. The wife's like, oh, yeah, you'll be fine.
Yeah. So, well, your doctor gave you the sign off, and then just in case, you're bringing a doctor with you. So,
yeah, exactly. Like, if anything goes wrong, he's there to, you know,
sure,
call for help. Right. So, like, yeah, it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. That I've done the whole, like, looking up the temperature's supposed to start at -2 and get up to +1. And the wind kind of concerned me because when I first looked, like, right at shooting light, so shooting light's like almost 720.
Okay.
And at 720, there's supposed to be like no wind. And then I was like, oh no, this isn't going to be good. But by 9 o'clock, it's supposed to get up to 18 kilometers per hour. I'm like, okay, now we're talking. That's where I want it. And yeah, you can see the graphic. The graph, like, shows it's going straight across, and then it goes boop right at shooting light. No wind at shooting light, but then peaks right up 2 hours later. So
weird. That's crazy.
Yeah. Just a dip right where that is. And then, yeah. But like the wind direction, like everything's lining up and I'm getting out. I could care less. Right.
Right.
It could be pouring rain, no wind and like no wind. And yeah, 50 other guys, I'm getting out. It's going to be a good day.
That's
first day of
matters.
The season. Yeah. So no, I'm going to focus on me tomorrow. See if, you know, I don't want the extra for paddling. Right. It's my first time paddling, right? That's kind of, yeah, that's, we'll see how that goes. So
just hook up, throw a life jacket on the dog, hook a harness up to it and let it pull you.
Yeah. Just throw the ball and say fetch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Who needs a mud motor?
Right.
Just get a dog.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good idea. So
yeah. Another one you should look at though. Backwater came out with a small 3 horsepower.
Yep. Yep.
And I saw that at that same expo. I was there because I was working in the new canoe booth with a local dealer. And he's also, all he does is pretty much sell duck boats. That's all he does.
Yeah.
So he's a pro dive dealer. He's a Gator Tracks dealer, Mud Buddy dealer, new canoe dealer, and a backwater dealer. So we did an unlimited with a brand new 3 horsepower backwater.
Yep.
That is a slick little motor.
Hmm.
That is a slick motor, like just the way it goes on and off and everything else, like the SPS, you have to like unbolt it and whatnot, not unbolt it, but it's got big twist knobs and like there's a wrench you should lock it down with. Like this is one pin to take it off. Like it's super easy.
Oh man. Yeah. And then that'd be perfect. So I guess I haven't shown pictures of it yet, but like, as I've been waiting for the season to go on, I bought a fully enclosed trailer, a 14-foot trailer. And then I put the two new canoes in it, and then I have pretty much everything I need for duck hunting is in that trailer. And then I left room at the top above the to either put a third new canoe or put two mud motors.
There you go.
I'm really, yeah, we'll see. It's hard getting some of that stuff up here in Canada though.
Sure.
Like you almost have to like, yeah, I'm coming down to hunt with Brad. And,
yeah. I got a spot on the couch for it. I don't even, and I've been on the couch. I had a spare bedroom.
Yeah. But like come down and hunt and then like, oh, somehow two mud motors showed up. Yeah.
I know, just the place you can
do. Yeah, see, that's just it. And it's good to have connections down in the States that know where all this stuff is, right? Everything right. good for hunting is down there. Up here, like, we're really fortunate we have Canadian Waterfowl Supplies, and he gets a lot of the stuff in that, like, real geese decoys for silhouettes, you know, stuff sure. that I guess Cabela's and that's starting to get their own brand of silhouettes, but. Like for years, that's kind of where the go-to place, Canadian Waterfowl Supplies. They've got everything you need, and they're starting to see the market open up a little bit here. But yeah, it's still behind what I would like it to be. So we have a fraction of the hunters too. It would be hard for a small, you know, like Mud Buddy. They can sell out everything that they make down in the States.
Right.
It would be hard to justify getting stuff up to Canada. I understand, right?
Right.
We don't have the huge base for it. For the amount of people that need it, they can drive down, pick it up, bring sure. it back on their own. So I understand. Yeah.
Makes sense.
But yeah, I guess I should caveat this with nothing that I said about illegal activity is true. I would never subvert the justice system about, you know, taxes across the border or whatever that is.
I would never go to, I'd never go down to the States to buy anything.
Yeah. And not claim it.
Right.
Right. That's yeah. But even like ammo. So the doctor at the start of the season, he's like, yeah, you can shoot a 28 gauge. And I'm like, well, okay. I found like number 6 and 4 boxes of number 4. So I bought a 28 gauge and it can do 3-inch. Well, you can't get 3-inch 28 gauge in Canada. It's not on the approved list.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was like, okay. Just one more thing that, you know, you Americans have that's awesome.
I'm surprised. Why was the 28 okay, but like a 20 wouldn't be? I mean, I really don't feel like there's that much more recoil in a 20, like, because the little heavier gun soak up a little recoil, or you get to like something with a nice kickoff system on it.
No, like the 3-inch for the 28 gauge.
No, I know. I'm talking about your doctor that a 28 would be okay, but like I'm assuming there's a recoil.
He looked at the actual, there's a little chart that he found online, and he's like, the 12 gauge has this much recoil. The 20 gauge has this much recoil. The 28 gauge has this much, and I'll approve you for that. And I'm like, okay, well, what about rifles? And he's like, no. so
no. Yeah.
I was wanting a 28 gauge anyway. And then this just, it was like a sign from the gods to just buy one. So went out and got it.
I got a buddy that loves it. That's his favorite duck gun. That's a 28.
Man. I shot it. We had our two camps and I brought the gun with me, and there was an opportunity that presented itself, and I shot at the goose, and it definitely folded the goose on its own. So I was very happy with it. And I find I can pick up the second shot quicker because you got no recoil. And the thing is just, I really, really like it. I have to see what it's like, you know, in a high impact when the ducks are flying by, you know, a flyby shot or
sure
stuff like that, like see how it goes. But I think with some tweaking, I think it's going to be my gun.
So is that what you're bringing tomorrow?
That's what I'm bringing tomorrow until, nice. Yeah, he's going to look up all the stuff, and I did all my final x-rays and stuff today, and he's going to call me on Wednesday to approve the rest. I'm pretty sure I'll be fine.
Sure.
But yeah, now that I've been shooting the 28 and I did some target practice, it's like, man, I love this thing. This is, you know, why have the sore shoulder when you can just shoot this? And yeah, I'll probably miss even more.
I used my 20 a lot this year. I mean,
yep.
I loved it. It's worked great especially anything like any of my small creek spots or small pothole spots where I know it's going to be birds down less than 30 yards, no matter what. And I want my birds down anyways. I don't do much pass shooting. I would rather let birds circle and leave than to take a shot. Like, I just want to see them. I want to trick them. I want them to be like, all right, we're coming in. Like, is it the decoys? Is it the calling? Like, something made them think, like, this plastic floating crap on the water, those are real ducks. Like, we're going to go hang out with them. Like, that's what I want. Like, that's, I mean, nope, I got nothing against people that pass shoot or anything like that. Like, but I prefer, like, now, like, I would rather shoot one duck that was cupped up, backpedaling, orange feet, just plowed down, compared to getting a limit pass shooting on a bank.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. That's, and some people talk about, like, what you think about shooting birds that have landed. You know what? You've won that game. You're playing a game. You've won that game, and you're going to make that shot. I have no problems with it.
Neither right? do I.
Shoot them. You've won. Congrats. Good job.
Them, like, birds land in your decoys. You're right. You won.
Yeah. Right. Like, you fooled the bird into thinking there's no human here and these birds are real. Like, what else do you want? Right. You know? So yeah, I have no problem with it.
Neither do I. Well, Dave, I'll give you the next couple minutes. You can shout out anybody you want to, sponsors, your podcast again, let everyone know how to find you. And then I'll drop all the links here in the show description.
Yeah, no, you know what? I got to thank everyone that helped us out with our camps. Real Geese Decoys, Canadian Waterfowl Supplies, First Light, New Canoe, Vortex Optics. Like, I got to thank them all for that, for the camps. They helped us out a bunch. I'm probably forgetting someone. It was months ago, but thank you to everyone that helps out. Thank you to everyone that comes to our camps. If you don't know about us, check us out on YouTube, Punisher Waterfowl. Check us out on all the major podcasts. If there's something you want to see, let us know. We're there to help. We're on Instagram, Facebook. Yeah. I don't really have much, man.
That's a lot right there.
That's, like, a lot right there.
You got a lot of support just for those camps. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's good. So, yeah.
I appreciate you coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, buddy. It's always good. You guys are great. You know, pretty much everyone on that New Canoe team seems like good chaps. So,
I think so as well. It's got that family vibe going on. I mean, I feel like us hunters need to stick together. There's a lot of fishing guys on there.
And that's just it, right? Like, I see all the fishing love, but we need a lot more of the hunting love, right? So, yeah.
Well, let's start beating up Brian with some, like, here's pictures, and just keep dumping pictures eventually.
Yeah. I told him that I was going to be doing that as soon as I could hunt. We were actually planning. So there's now 8 guys in Ontario that are now hunting out of the New Canoes.
Awesome.
And we were planning to do, like, this is the first year that a lot of them had their New Canoes. And I was like, all right, guys, we're going to do a hunt this year together. Like, thanks for picking up on what I'm putting down about these things. And then, of course, I kind of hurt myself and couldn't paddle. But yeah,
you still got some season left, though. You got like a month and you got over a month.
Yeah, I kind of want to do it more of a fair weather thing where we can actually use it as a teaching and almost like a seminar. So I think next year with everyone, we're going to pick a weekend and just meet up, and it's just going to be a, you know, 8 New Canoes wide and see how many ducks we can get. Right.
And you can run around with your mud motor and pick up all the birds.
Right. So, yeah. So, no,
good. I appreciate you coming on, Dave.
Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate all the listeners for tuning in, and until next time, keep chasing that experience.
Hey, thanks.
Do you like that? That was a quick double tap.
No, I was just going to say before we go, Brad, I think I've been on the podcast for you guys a few times. I think it's time you come on ours.
I'm game. You say when?
Yeah, Thursday. We'll talk. We'll talk, buddy.
Thursday's a holiday for us.
What? Really?
Thanksgiving.
Oh, right. You guys don't. Yeah. You guys have a weird Thanksgiving and Black Friday. That's huge. That's a holiday down in the States, right?
It is. Black Friday is out of control. I will be somewhere hunting. I do not take part. It's always crazy. It is weird though. Like, we'll finish up the show eventually, but it's always weird though. Like, I'm going out in the morning to go duck hunting, and normally I duck hunt Black Fridays, and like, there's all this traffic at like 3:30 or 4 in the morning. I'm like, what? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. And have you seen that meme going around? Like me going duck hunting at 3 a.m.
Yes.
Seeing another car. Wonder what they're up to. Yeah, it's good. But no, it's time for you to come on our podcast, buddy. I think it'll be a good time.
Agreed. I'm in 100%. So good. Can't do this Thursday, but next Thursday, I probably in game. I don't know if you do it weekly.
Yeah, it's weekly. We film Thursdays and release Mondays. So yeah, we'll talk about it more. I just wanted to put you on the spot while I was still on the show, and thanks for restarting it for me.
Yeah. I didn't know I could do that. I'm like, oh, we'll just shut that off real quick.
Yeah. Good.
Well, appreciate you coming on, Dave. And for those that tune into Dave's podcast, you're going to see me there shortly, it sounds like. So
yeah,
good. Until next time, everyone, keep chasing that experience.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.